Hello, cinefans. I'm Kendall Kruger, and this is Watching Classic Movies. My guest is Dorothy Schultz, curator of the James Dean Museum in Fairmount, Indiana. We had a great talk about this thriving tribute to an actor who burned bright in a short life and left a lasting legacy. The museum is home to the largest collection of Dean artifacts and attracts visitors from around the world. It is also deeply loved by the surrounding community, which includes Dean's family. Dorothy shared stories about the museum and the annual festival it hosts, tips about how to make the most of a visit, and what Dean means to her as an artist and influential figure. Welcome, Dorothy. Thank you for joining me today.
Oh, thank you.
My first question for you is, what do you love about James Dean?
Wow. Well, it's hard to really pinpoint, but I guess, you know, if I had to say, it would be that he was a true artist. And there's nothing I admire more about a person than if they're really devoted to their craft. And he was. And just he was just fearless. You know, you have a farm boy from Indiana who goes out and, you know, conquers Hollywood in a few short years. I mean, that's just unheard of. And I think that's what I admire and respect most about him.
Well, I know there unfortunately isn't a lot to draw from, but do you have some favorite James Dean performances that kind of speak to that quality?
Yeah. I really love his television performances. You know, he appeared in over 30 episodes of TV. And, you know, back then, television was live. So watching him perform, you really get a true sense of his absolute genius and his improvisational skills and his ability to work off people and also like inanimate objects as a method actor. But so much of his acting was intuitive. So in The Dark, Dark Hours, for instance, which might be my favorite performance of his, and he's acting against, or alongside, I should say, Ronald Reagan, which is hysterical because, you know, Reagan, he's so stiff, so wooden, and Jimmy's just all, you know, Jimmy's just, he's yeah. Like a kid in a candy store. He's just all over the screen. I mean, he's dancing, he's smoking a cigarette, he's, you know, he just takes over. And you can't watch anyone else when he's on screen. It doesn't matter who he's with. And so I would say his television performances. As for, you know, his movies, he, as we know, only starred in three movies. So East of Eden, Rebel Without a Cause, and Giant. I would have to say that, you know, I would have to say that East of Eden is my favorite of his performances, mainly because his cousin, Marcus Jr., who he was raised with and who still lives in the farmhouse and is still deeply involved in the museum, has said that, you know, Jimmy as Cal Trask in East of Eden, it's really just Jimmy on the screen. It's the closest to how Jimmy actually was as a person. And I love knowing that. So it makes me enjoy the performance that much more.
Yeah, that's really moving. So yeah. What brought you to your position as curator at the museum?
Well, it's a very long story. So as an 8-year-old girl, my mother, she worked at the time as a librarian. And if my brother and sister and I were really good, which we often were, you could rent a movie from the library for $1. And it was my turn, you know, to be able to rent because I was really good. And so I was looking at the movies, and my mother, she's somewhat of a film buff. So she, you know, Turner Classics is always on. She's probably watching it right now. And she suggested, well, why don't we get this one? And it was Rebel Without a Cause, because as a little girl, I could have been Natalie Wood's double as a little girl. Unfortunately, not as much now, but as a little girl, like, it's, the resemblance was uncanny, so much so that my family, my nickname was always Nat growing up, and it still is with my mother. And I remember we went home and, you know, she put it in and I was just transfixed. I don't really know why, but I just became obsessed with the movie. I would watch it every day. I would act out scenes, you know, and of course it was always me as Natalie with Jimmy. So it started somewhat on, you know, as a childish kind of imagining, you know, and as a child, I was always doing things like that, you know, putting on skits and writing little poems and things like that and drawing. Yeah. So it was very natural. But then as I grew older, you know, for my birthday or for Christmas, I always get something James Dean related. And, you know, I got to know him more, and then I started reading everything I could about him, and then kept getting deeper and deeper into it, and just became somewhat, I don't like the word obsessed, because it makes it seem like you don't really have a grasp on reality, but I just became immersed in just his life, the drama of his life, who he truly was as a person and as an artist, and how he really changed America in a way. You know, Dennis Hopper says, you know, Marlon Brando changed the way people acted, James Dean changed the way people lived. And I think that's absolutely true.
Yeah, we're so used to the influence, I think, that we're not aware of how profound it was. I mean, just even just the concept of a teenager and the feelings that someone that age has, you know, and that he was embodying in those roles was a little novel at the time, I felt.
Yeah.
So you've had some changes at the museum fairly recently. I hear you officially changed the name to the James Dean Museum.
Yes. So we decided to do that about, well, it's been almost like a year and a half ago, almost 2 years. And that really came about just because people visiting, they're always referring to it as the James Dean Museum. And then, you know, the people that are always visiting the museum, 99% of them are visiting because they're avid James Dean fans.
Right. And
James Dean fans are interesting because of their devotion. They're not like regular fans. They're like all in, you know. And the museum, for those that don't know, we have the Winslow family's personal collection of James Dean's belongings. So we have more of Jimmy's actual belongings than anywhere on earth. So we have, for instance, his first motorcycle, his 125cc 1947 Czech motorcycle. And then we have his 1955 Triumph TR5 Trophy 500cc motorcycle. We have his baby clothes. We have movie props, like the monkey from Rebel Without a Cause. We have his motorcycle jacket, his leather jacket. We have his boots from Giant, his script from Giant. We have his script from Siva Jaguar, which is so, you know, incredibly rare.
We even have his
script from Hill Number One, which was his first credited television role, with his notes all over it. I mean, it's unbelievable. We have his, you know, toys as a child, his own artwork, because Jimmy himself, as I was saying earlier, was such an artist. So for him, it was so important to always be creating. And so we have a lot. He loved watercoloring. So we have a lot of his watercolors on display. We have his self sculpture, which was made famous from the James Dean story, the Robert Altman documentary, the 1957 documentary. We have that self sculpture, which was oil-based clay, so it's still malleable. We have that on display. We have his last sculpture that he was doing under the tutelage of Pago Waring in California. We have his racing suit that he was racing in his races in Palm Springs, Bakersfield, and Santa Barbara. We have his racing trophies. We have his Oscar nominations from the Academy.
That's
we have it's every day, you know, I get goosebumps still. We have, how could I forget this? We have his Matador cape and horns. You know, Jimmy, he was so passionate about bullfighting.
From the picture with the horns?
Yes,
Is it the dentist?
From the Roy Schat photo. Yeah.
Wow.
And, you know, he loved those. And those supposedly had belonged to Sidney Franklin, who was a Brooklyn-based matador. And a director had given them to Jimmy on one of his visits to Tijuana, I believe. And, you know, even his conga drums and bongos. So we have the conga drum made famous besides the Dennis Stock photos, but also made famous because the singer Morrissey used that conga drum in his Suede Head music video when he came here in, I think it was 88 for that.
Oh, wow. Yeah, those drums are either famous or infamous, depending on whether you were. I think he was quite right. The guy at the parties with his drums.
Yeah, I love those. Fans will know them, but there's somewhat rare photos of Jimmy where he has the conga strapped on his back and he's walking in New York. In New York City.
Well, no, you still get an emotional reaction to this. So I'm just wondering, you're talking about how devoted James Dean fans, how do people react to seeing these items?
Oh, wow. Yeah. So it runs the gambit, you know? So we have some people that come in that are just, they love the 50s. So it's not so much James Dean, but majority of people, you know, you never know, like, this is a few months ago, but it's stuck with me. And it was an older man. He was probably in his 60s or 70s. And, you know, I was giving him a tour of the museum and, you know, it was going fine. Like, he was interested. He had seen all of the movies and had been a fan for most of his life. And then we got to the last room, and it was the giant, one of our giant displays, and there's a Marlin 22 caliber 32 a rifle that Jimmy had used in Marfa, Texas to shoot jackrabbits. So I just like point to the rifle and he bursts into tears, and I was like, oh my goodness, I was so taken aback. I was just kind of frozen because I like didn't understand what was happening. And I was like, oh, are you all right? And he said, I had that same gun as a boy. And he was just so touched to see, you know, that Jimmy had it as well. But then, you know, we'll have people like come in and they'll just, when you first open the door, one of the first things you'll see is Jimmy's first motorcycle, the Czech motorcycle. And people, this has happened more than once, and it always makes me laugh because it's just so great. They'll open the door and they'll just scream. They'll just be like, the motorcycle. And then other people, it will be more like a quiet, like I can tell they're getting a little bit choked up. Like if I'm talking about Jimmy's mom, Mildred, sometimes people will get a little bit choked up, I think, just because people, you know, Jimmy himself was so interesting and just so complex and so multifaceted that people of all ages and from all different walks of life relate to him. So I never know until, you know, I get to really talking to them, like what's really going to hit them most, you know?
That's right. There's so much to draw from.
Yeah.
Because he did seem at heart to remain who he was, and yet he had this glamorous career. So there's so many experiences one could, you know, look at. And I imagine you must have people from all over the world as well.
Yeah, all over. So he's huge in Japan. So we get a lot of Japanese people in, and somewhere it's their first time in America and they're choosing to come to Fairmount, which is incredible, you know. And then a lot of people from, you know, California. This morning there were people from Texas, New York. I mean, you never know. And that makes it really exciting. And then it's also, you know, very touching to witness that, to see that Jimmy's is still affecting people so strongly.
Yeah, the whole world comes to you, comes to this museum. How can people make the most of their experience at this museum? Like what's the best way to approach it?
I think, I think it would be good if people, there are some, you know, really wonderful books on James Dean. If they've read those beforehand, even if it's just The Mutant King by David Dalton, or James Dean by Val Holly, or even Jimmy and Me by Lou Baracker, which is just a touching book about his friendship with Jimmy at the end of Jimmy's life. But just so they have like a base to go off of if they aren't like a lifelong fan, you know?
Yeah, even just
to watch the three movies beforehand. So they understand when they see Jimmy's lasso from Giant, like how significant and how symbolic that item is.
Yeah. Oh, though, that makes sense to see it all in action. And I do want to note before I go into other activities around the museum that there is also an exhibit about Jim Davis, the creator of Garfield.
Yes, there is, because bizarrely enough, our Jim Davis was also raised in Fairmount, just like James Dean. And a lot of people assume that he's from Muncie because he did attend Ball State, just like David Letterman. But no, he was raised here in Fairmount.
We do get
Garfield fans coming in, and then, you know, I'll show them our Garfield display, and then I'll of course always make them do the James Dean tour.
Yeah, since you're here.
And then we'll end up getting like a lot of James Dean Garfield fans out there.
I mean, it did amuse me because those are two things from when I was young that I loved, like really loved. Yeah. So to see them together, they're not so opposite to me as it might appear, you know? Yeah.
I know what you mean.
Yeah, yeah. So there are other things though. Is this put on by the museum, the festival?
Yes. So we've been sponsoring the festival since 1975.
Wow.
So we have a museum board where all year we are basically planning this festival. Tonight, actually, at 7 o'clock, we have a meeting about the festival. So the festival, we have a huge car show. It's over 1,500 cars.
Oh my gosh.
And we have one area that's really neat. It's called Mercury Row, and it's all old Mercs, because, you know, in Rebel Without a Cause, Jimmy's car was a 49 Mercury. And we have a parade that goes right down Washington Street, which is historic because that's the street Jimmy would always take to go to high school on Vine Street. He'd have to take a ride on Vine. And it's also the same street where the famous bank photo of Jimmy walking in front of the bank by Dennis Stock was taken on his last visit home in February of 55. And then we have, you know, vendors everywhere. There's a carnival. We have a 50s dance contest. And then we have our famous James Dean lookalike contest, which is always a hoot. And contestants get really into it. Actually, there's one contestant, he's won 2 years in a row now. Oh. And last year he found a vintage vintage pea coat that's very similar to the one Jimmy wore. And he actually made a replica of Jimmy's conga just for this contest. So, yeah, it's just so great. In the past, we've had contestants, dress up as Jet Rink, and one, he even like had molasses all over him, just like Jimmy, to look like oil, like he had just struck oil.
Oh, gosh. That's great. But I mean, I don't know how comfortable that would be. That's devotion.
I know.
So I'm just curious about the parade. Is there anything specifically James Dean about it? Like, do people, I'm trying to visualize what that is, or is it just a kind of?
Yeah, so the parade is more like what you'd expect from a small town parade. Like, just, it's very charming. So, you know, you have like Boy Scout, Girl Scout groups marching, and then, a baseball team, and then you'll have like a float from one of the classes that graduated from Fairmount High School, and, you know, the band playing. And a lot of fans really love coming here because they feel like it's a step back in time, because Fairmount has made it a mission to kind of keep things preserved, which is, you know, in this day and age, that's kind of unheard of. So a lot of the spots, you know, Jimmy frequented in town, you know, still exist. Fans love it because they feel like they can walk where Jimmy walked, and, you know, feel like they can really understand where he was coming from.
And I was wondering about that as well. What kind of are the great spots to go see around town that are related to James Dean?
Yeah. So unfortunately, we couldn't raise the funds to save the high school, but we did save the stage that Jimmy performed on, and that's out at Playacres Park. So that's one thing that's really amazing to see, and it's the James Dean Memorial Stage. And during the festival, we have rockabilly bands playing on that stage. So it's amazing to get up on that stage and be like, oh my goodness, I'm standing where Jimmy was Frankenstein's monster in Goon with the Wind. You know? I mean, it's just unbelievable. And, you know, there's Payne's Garage, where Jimmy used to park his Czech motorcycle before going to the high school so his friends wouldn't mess with it. And there's Carter's Motorcycle Shop, where Jimmy got his first motorcycle and where he hung out almost every day of his life. That was run by Marvin and Mildred Carter, and that's still there. And now it's the Marion 9th Street Gang. It's their car headquarters. But, you know, fans can see that. And then, of course, you know, there's Back Creek Church, where Jimmy did his first acting as a boy, because his aunt was part of the Women's Christian Temperance Union. So she'd have Jimmy doing speeches on like the evils of alcoholism. And so that's important, because that's really where Jimmy did his first acting ever. Right next to that, you have the Winslow Farm, which is it will take your breath away. It's unbelievable. It's a beautiful white farmhouse, two ponds on either side. You know, there's horses outside. There's like cows grazing. I mean, it's just remarkable and just picturesque to see. And then sadly, but you know, you can pay your respects to Jimmy at Park Cemetery, where he's buried, and, you know, fans leave all kinds of things for Jimmy there. There's always lipstick marks on his headstone and cigarettes. People leave letters to him, little trinkets, things that, you know, are really dear to them. They'll leave like guitar picks, all kinds of things. And then in Marion, there's Jimmy's birthplace. So the house where he was born, the House of Seven Gables apartment houses, isn't there, but there's a nice memorial for him there. You know, fans can visit that. And then also in Marion, there's the cemetery where his mother is buried, and some fans like to visit her as well, because she never gets enough credit. She was really, you know, instrumental in Jimmy's life. And, you know, her death, of course, is something he never recovered from. And how could he? But she was the first to really instill that love of the arts in him. You know, supposedly his middle name was Byron because her favorite poet was Lord Byron. She loved poetry. She had the gift of mimicry like Jimmy. And, you know, Jimmy is recorded in that little secret recording he did on his last visit home. And we have the recorder on display that he used. And he's asking his grandparents, you know, where did I get my artistic talent? And they talk about his grandfather, Cal Dean, who was an auctioneer. And, you know, there's that famous stock photo of Jimmy in front of the Cal headstone. But I always think to myself, like, well, why didn't they mention Mildred? Because I think he probably got a lot of his talent from her as well.
I wonder if they just didn't see her in that role, because the way you were talking, I thought, well, she probably could have been an actress. It sounds like she had the talent for that. Yeah.
Yeah. I think they were probably just thinking of, yeah, maybe just their side of the family, which I'm sure he got some of it from Cal, who was the auctioneer. But yeah, Jimmy's mother just isn't discussed enough, I don't think, personally.
Yeah. I mean, I always feel like it is at the core of his story. It drove him a lot. It developed him on one side, and then it kind of affected him on the other side of it, really. Now, so you were talking about the Winslow family. They're still involved with the museum?
Yes. So Marcus, who was Marcus Sr. and Orton's their son. So when he was born, you know, Jimmy was already living on the farm. So even though technically they're cousins, to him, Jimmy was always there. He was just like an older brother. And the amazing thing is, you know, he still lives in the farmhouse where he was raised with Jimmy. And he's still, you know, very much involved in the museum. And his eldest son, Coy, is on the museum board. So, you know, they're just incredible people, just such dear, just kind people who really sincerely care about continuing Jimmy's legacy and keeping it going for fans. And we're just so lucky that they've invested so much time and energy into the museum.
I mean, that's lovely to hear. It explains to some degree the longevity of the museum, that just so many people are invested in it, the community, you know, his family.
Yeah.
And then, of course, there's the fan support as well. I do want to point out, I was looking at the website, and if people want to connect with the museum and aren't able to visit, there is a pretty fantastic gift shop on there. I mean, so many t-shirts just to start. I couldn't believe it. I'm like, okay, somebody would find something they want to hear. And I also, I just thought it was interesting you were talking about your resemblance to Judy in Rebel of the Cause, because that was one of the most fascinating items to me on the site, was there's a compact, like her compact.
Yes. Yeah. So we decided to make a replica of her compact, you know, that she leaves in the police station during Rebel Without a Cause, and Jim Stark picks up and then, you know, later gives to her and is like, do you want to see a monkey? But yeah, we try to have things for sale for like the really serious fans, where they would see the compact and be like, I have to have this.
Yeah.
And then, you know, and then fans that just are like, oh, you know, I would like a t-shirt with Jimmy's face on it.
No, the array is there. It is present. And I was impressed. So before I let you go, is there anything else that you need our listeners and prospective travelers to know about the James Dean Museum?
Yes. So we are going to be moving locations to be on Fairmount's Main Street in a big gray building, which used to be a Ben Franklin store. So Jimmy, you know, would go in that a lot growing up in Fairmount. And the Winslow family is going to be giving us even more things to display. And I can't say at the moment, like, what those things are, but I mean, it's so incredible that when I first heard what things they're thinking of giving us to display, I burst into tears.
Oh, wow.
So fans are just going to, they just won't believe it. And we're hoping to be in that new location before our festival in 2024.
Okay, so coming up fairly soon.
Yeah, and so I would say just for fans right now, they can follow us on Instagram. We post every day, you know, with visitors to the museum and also, you know, photos of Jimmy and just facts that we find interesting. And that our festival this year is going to be September 22nd, 23rd, and 24th. And that if they're interested in visiting, they should look into getting hotels or accommodations as soon as possible.
Oh, I bet everything fills up. Yeah, I've heard it's so popular. Yeah. Well, it's been wonderful to talk to you about this museum. Like I said, this was the first kind of museum with a tribute like this that I'd ever heard of in my teenage years getting into classic film stars. And, you know, I still would like to come visit someday. I guess I'm going to have to come and find out what all these new things are in the new location. That's going to be my motivation, right?
Yes, yes, please do. I'll give you the grand tour.
right. That's a huge motivator. All right. Well, I really appreciate you taking the time, Dorothy. Thank you so much. And good luck with all the future pursuits of the museum.
Oh, thank you so much. And I just want to say to James Dean fans out there, you know, that we so deeply appreciate your dedication to Jimmy, because it's really because of the fans that his memory and his legacy continues.
The James Dean Museum is included in my book, Classic Film Fan USA Travel Guide, over 500 attractions for road trips and online exploration. It's available wherever you buy books online. You can find out more at watchingclassicmovies.com, where I'll also share more information about the James Dean Museum, including a link to their delightful Instagram account. Thank you for listening. This is Kendall Kruver, Watching Classic Movies. Until next time.